You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network and The Conversation with Adam Weber, lead pastor of Embrace Church and author of Love Has a Name.
This is The Conversation. My name is Adam. A huge happy new year to all of you. I can't believe it's a new year. We have stepped into 2021. And I just have to say, I am excited about this new year and all that this new year has in store. And why am I excited? Why am I excited? Not because of politics this or politics that, not because of COVID, a vaccine, or whatever else. Instead, why am I excited? Because you and I, we have a God who is good, a God who is faithful, a God who is in control of all things. And because of that, we can look forward into this new year with excitement and expectation of all that God has in store for us. And so I want to encourage you today. And again, I want to welcome you here. If this is your first time on the podcast, on The Conversation, welcome to you. If you've joined us in the past and are coming back, a huge welcome. I do not take it lightly that you are here. Welcome back to The Conversation. As we look into this new year, I am so incredibly excited about some of the guests that we have. I mean, I'm not joking. Guests that we've already interviewed, guests that we have to interview in the future. There are some amazing people, some people that I'm like, why did you sit down with me? I'm so excited to share those conversations with all of you. If you haven't done so yet, go and leave a review on this podcast, on iTunes, on Spotify. The more reviews, the better. Be honest. If you don't like it, that's totally cool to leave a bad review. I'm totally okay with that. I'm a grown man. I can take it. So leave a review. Also, if there's an episode that challenges you, encourages you, please share it on your socials. Send a text message to a friend. Selfishly, I love this podcast because it pours into me. The guests that I sit down with, I feel like I need to hear what they have to say just as much as anybody. But my greatest hope, the reason that I do this podcast, is to encourage and challenge all of you and encourage and challenge all of your friends. That's the reason that I do it. I just want to use as anything that God has given me, any conversations that I have, to encourage and challenge all of you. So please share, review, the more the merrier. Today's conversation, my first guest in 2021 is comedian Dustin Nickerson. And I've heard Dustin on stage a few times now, and he is hilarious. If you don't follow him on Instagram, I got a link to his Instagram in the show notes here. Both times that I've heard him do his comedy show, he was not the headliner, but I can remember both times leaning over to my wife and saying, soon, there are crazy awesome things ahead for this guy because he is so stinking funny. Dustin's got a new show that I believe released on Amazon Prime. We'll do a link in the show notes to that as well. I haven't seen it personally, but I've heard it's hilarious. Dustin and I, we talked about the trials of 2020, and we talked about the importance of comedy in the midst of trials and how powerful comedy is. We talked about politics. We also talked about being creative and how the world has changed and what that's looked like for him in the area of comedy. But I believe what he shared is applicable to anybody, whether you're a comedian, whether you're a pastor, whether you're a business leader. He had some gold to share. So I know that you are going to be encouraged. Your cheeks are going to hurt from smiling. As always, sit back, relax, and enjoy this conversation. Well, I am so excited to be sitting down with Dustin here. Dustin, I want to welcome you to the podcast today.
Thank you. I'm so sad that I couldn't be doing this in person right now. I would have loved to spend my December day in Sioux Falls. Would have loved it.
Dustin, people are following you all over the place, Instagram, blah, blah, blah. Like, before that, though, I know nothing of your story. If you want to start, even, I don't even know where you're at right now, location wise.
Yeah.
But if you just want to share hometown originally and kind of just parts of your story and all.
Sure. Yeah. No, I like being at an undisclosed location. I live in San Diego. Right before we got on here, I was reading about the tyranny of King Newsom and our new guidelines. We're not going to get too political on this, but I looked at my wife and I said, I think the only people more ridiculous than politicians are the people who still take politicians seriously. You know, like they're not like they're guys. It's not like the brightest group, you know, it wasn't people who like the people who got into politics were people who wanted to be popular. You have to be popular to be a politician. You know, I know we're off the rails. You asked me where I'm from.
Oh, this is totally okay.
I immediately went into politics, but I was reading about it right before we get on here because, you know, there's these new restrictions and I would never be super critical of like the decisions because who would want that job? Who wants to run a state with tens of millions of people in the midst of a pandemic? But all that to say, I live in San Diego, California, and with my wife and my three kids, who I'm sure at some point you're going to hear. Yeah, I can hear them through the wall right now. So we're down here, and I'm originally from Seattle specifically. I'm from Federal Way, Washington, which is right next to Tacoma. So Seattle area, went to college up there, went to the University of Washington. Had various jobs all along the lines, everything from I was in ministry for a while. I was managing a rec center for a while. I thought I wanted to be a sports journalist for a while. I paid my dues as a barista for a while because it's just something that's required when you're from the Northwest. Started comedy about 8 years ago, which was a bad decision before a pandemic. And now it's like, it's the worst job there is. There's no job. I told my wife, I said like, this is, so right now, my dad lives with us, you know, cause he came down here to live. My dad lives with us. I don't have a way to make money. I have a curfew and I have to go to school every day. Like I have all the worst parts of childhood. And it's just like being a kid where, you know, when you're a kid, and your parents make rules that don't apply to them. That's what the government is. Like, that, like, oh, I don't, you get to go to, did you see that one today of the mayor of Austin? Did you see this story? The mayor, yes, of Austin telling you need to stay home, but they filmed from Cabo. I mean, you can't make this stuff. That's part of the reason that comedy is so bad right now. It's like, I can't top you guys. And it's not a political stance. I mean, like, there's idiots on all sides. That's the one thing, is idiocy is on all sides of the political spectrum. I'm a little worked up. I saw that story of the Austin mayor before I went to bed, and I threw my phone, and then I woke up, and then I saw the thing, and I told Melissa, I'm almost starting to turn into like the Joker, when anytime I see it, I just have this like maniacal laugh. That you're like, I think he thinks it's funny, but I also think he's unwell. You know, that's how I'm starting to feel.
No, that is so good. I saw that too, and I'm like, oh my gosh, what?
It's just wild.
What?
It's just
what
absolutely,
are you doing?
Yeah, well, and it was like today, like AOC came out with a shirt of.
I didn't see this.
A tax the rich shirt. The shirt is $65. $65. I'm like, who on your team? And I don't dislike AOC. This is a new bit that I'm working on. There you go. You get at the ground level. It's like, your politics are like children to me. Like, I don't care about yours. Like, I don't care. I care about mine. I'm invested in mine. I'm glad that you have yours, but I don't need to hear about them. When they're dancing during the dance recital, I'm going to be on my phone. Like, I'm not going to watch your, so it's not even about anyone. Cause again, you can see, all across. So you're just like, who on your team didn't tell you that maybe it's a bad idea to have a tax the rich shirt for $65 in the midst of shutting down the economy? Just the optics of it. And that's that they're like celebrities. They just kind of live in their own world where there's no one on their team going like, no, I understand that it's made in America and made by unions, and that's why it's a little more expensive, but just the visual of this is probably not ideal.
Dustin, before we get into the comedy, so college, what did you go into? What did you go to college for? What did your parents do? Share that part.
So my folks, I was raised mostly by my dad. My folks split when I was five. My dad was, me ranting about politics actually kind of does tie into like who I am as a person, because I had this very kind of weird, unique upbringing. And that, so I grew up in a very, liberal area, in the Northwest. My dad worked for Alaska Airlines for 35 years. So we were raised by the union, but he's from a little rural town in Oregon called Coos Bay. So he's like this very, there's these pockets of Oregon where like the only places that you've ever seen who vote Democrat, but love NASCAR. And so it was this, and it was him in my house and my uncle Butch, who also worked for Alaska Airlines. And so like, it was kind of a nice, great mix of like good old boy, but also kind of reflective of the area that we lived in. And so my dad worked for, mostly raised by him. My mom worked at the grocery store, for her whole life, as far as I know at this point. So they did that. And then I went to college at UW, started off as a journalism major, journalism communication, thought I wanted to be a sports writer, then decided I wanted to go into ministry and was like, well, I'm already at this school. What should I study here? What's of interest to me? And I ended up being a religion major. So that's what I studied there. There's no good degree for comedy. You might as well have that one, I guess, long term. But it seemed helpful at the time. And but I was married in college too. So I got married. I was 19. My wife was at Seattle Pacific University at the time, and so we lived at SPU, and I went to UW and worked all throughout there. We were very much like the let's grow up fast couple. Like I would most for pretty much the 2-3 years that I was in. Cause I graduated from high school with an AA. So I was 2 years done. I was done with 2 years of college when I graduated from high school. And then the 2 years that I was in college, I would work, at Starbucks every morning from 4 to 9. And then I would go to school very tired. I would go to school very tired. I wouldn't recommend that.
I'm just curious. You brought it up a couple different times. Your walk with Christ, where did that come from?
Yeah, I started hanging around church circles around high school. I had an older friend who invited me and to like a skateboard rally. A lot of us got saved at skateboard rallies on the West Coast in the 90s. This was our path in. So I started going to church there and we started hanging out. I think I was just eager. The attractiveness to the church was a couple things to me, but one of it was just, at that age, it's just nice to be, teenagers are awful. This is a really, really tough group of people and highly judgmental that comes from their insecurities, right? That's where you get things like bullying and gossip and tearing each other down. And I wasn't I was kind of somewhere in between as far as a kid that was kind of popular, but also kind of got picked on in certain, I just kind of had like that normal in the middle teenage life. And even though there are tons of bad, mean kids in youth group, of course, at least I appreciated that it was an environment where that wasn't encouraged. They're trying to tell you to be something different. So I was drawn into the friend group as much as anything. And that just kind of, which by the way, is very biblical, right? You'll know me based on your love for one another. And so that really is, when that's done well, it's the most attractive message of the Christian faith. And so I would argue that it might be the only attractive message of the Christian faith at times.
Especially to,
which is why it's so detrimental when it's the opposite. You know what I mean? It's like a quarterback punting. You're like, you're doing the wrong thing. Like, that's not your job. It would be like a quarterback playing a different sport. Like, this is your whole function. The reason that you exist is to do this loving thing, and you're doing the complete opposite. So anyways, that's that, that kind of what we, you know, that started the,
what was, last question on that was your dad that does that. Is he,
No, he's kind of come around since. Yeah. And, which is cool. Appreciate that. You know, but, no, there was no, I wouldn't say I've never lived in like an, no one in my family is anti-faith in any sense. But they were not, practicing or anything that. I always laugh that they had my sister baptized when she was a baby, my older sister, which is funny. Cause like, they don't go to church. They never did. And, and then they didn't for me. And I was like, why did she get it? And I didn't. You guys are like, no, this is just for the oldest. Or you became atheist somewhere in between the two kids. I don't know. Or the first one turned out bad. So you're like, don't do that. That didn't work. It's just, it's funny to me that they did it for one kid. And it's not even a big gap. I was born 2.5 years later. What happened in those 2.5 years that you became anti-baptism?
That's good. That's good. You're so comedy. How sheer kind of what moved you to try that first off?
Share
about that process of like, I think I want to. That's a pretty big leap. I'm just saying, like,
I mean, there's the external, which is, hey, I love comedy, let's go do it, let's give it a try, let's go to open mics. And then there's the internal, which is, I have a crushing, absolute crippling need to be liked and approved and have giant holes in my heart, and I need strangers to give me affirmation every night of my life. So it's it's a mix of both of those things is what that is. But the practicals is, I grew up loving stand-up comedy, and you know, I was a very much a late start. I was 27 when I started stand-up, and by start I mean that's not like I got the job. That means I just started going to open mics, you know, at the local comedy club, and just fell in love with it and didn't stop doing it.
That first time though, that's not like you just went in like, I started selling cars. I mean, like,
yeah,
that feels like for me, like a terrifying.
Sure. Thing yeah. To yeah. try. Well, yeah, it is. Yeah. I mean, it's the stuff of nightmares for a lot of people, you know. I always tell people this, right? Cause you know, Americans' number one fear is public speaking. Like that's their, like, it's crazy. That's like, they'll avoid it at all costs. That they should use that as like the coronavirus scare tactics. Like if you get coronavirus, you have to become a public speaker. That would be more effective than what they're doing right now. And if you want people to take it more seriously, really speak to their heart. And then especially the idea that you have to go up there and be funny. But you know, it's so funny because in the moment it seems so high stakes, but in, you know, the scanned out view of things, it's very low stakes. I'm one of 25 comedians doing 3 minutes for 5 people, you know, in at an open mic where the bar could not be lower than at an open mic. So, you know, it was, I remember very vividly, but I was a little bit ahead because, you know, I wasn't new to public speaking. Like I'd been in front of groups before, lots. Okay. And that was something that I was always like good at and comfortable in. So I was nervous, you know, but I was mostly nervous that they wouldn't laugh. I wasn't nervous about the actual mechanics of it all.
Yeah, no, that's,
but I always tell people this, you said that you're scared. I always tell people this, they say like, they're like, oh, I could never do what you're doing. And I said, that's because you don't want to. I wanted to. So that's why I went and did it. If you don't have the desire. And then when people tell me, oh, I always wanted to try stand up, I said, well, do it. And you will know right away whether or not you want to keep doing it, because it is so hard and so bad that you'll know if it's worth it to you pretty quickly.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Dustin, if you want to share, like, did you have a moment where you really felt like your career got propelled forward? Did you have, like, do you have one of those moments? And then if you'd be willing to share, whether it's connected to work or not, like kind of rock bottom moment. Have you had that too, where you're just like, sure, what the heck am I doing?
Yeah. I mean, still waiting on that big moment. Anytime now, anytime would be great. No.
Oh, here's, my gosh.
Here's the metaphor that I use for stand-up. So there's no breakthroughs. There's no more Johnny Carson. Like there's no, the closest thing there is to like a breakthrough and stand up as far as like you're a star now is like getting on the Joe Rogan podcast. Like that's the closest there is. We live in the era now where there's so many channels and so much content all the time that it's very hard to get noticed in that. And then you have to kind of get noticed in it several times before people land and follow. Like you can have something go big and it gets shared a lot, but that doesn't always translate to followers and fans and so on and so forth. So I always say it's not really about a breakthrough. It's more like Andy and Shawshank Redemption, just coming in each night and chipping away. That's what entrepreneurship is. And it's very much what stand-up is. It's just, okay, I did another set tonight. You know, I chipped away. This new joke worked. Okay, I got it. And sometimes you get big chunks. Boom, I get to be on Comedy Central with Kevin Hart. Oh, that's a big chunk. That's not going to make me famous. It's not even going to make me that much money, but it's a big chunk, you know? Okay, I'm going to go on this big tour with Nate Bargatze. Boom, big chunk. Great. You know, these things happen. But you know, it's a lot of that, and it's a lot of betting on yourself. Like the special that came out, produced it ourselves, paid for it ourselves, own it ourselves. You know, Netflix, it wasn't coming to us or anything like that. This is something that we made. As far as rock bottom, I thought I had my rock bottom, and then this year happened. And it's been rock bottom. Since really mid-March. I'm not looking for pity. I just mean no. But here's the thing at like rock bottom is like, if this is our rock bottom, there's still stuff to do down here. You know, I didn't know that I needed to be grateful, to do shows indoors. I didn't know that that was something that I had to put on my gratefulness list. So we pivoted and we did the backyard tour. You know, and I was supposed to have a big showcase for Netflix, HBO, Hulu. That was all supposed to happen in April to see if they wanted the hour, and the world ends. And we go, okay, we're just making it ourselves now. Boom. So there's a lot of, you know, but I mean, financially, brutal year. But I would never ask for pity for that, because A, this is still my job. And there's so many people who had it worse, you know, the evictions and the, what is it? 4 out of 5 small businesses aren't going to reopen, you know, it's just a tragedy. It's so sad, but it is a particularly, and there's comedy clubs closing and venues closing and friends losing work. It's a sad time, but I will I've had some bad gigs and stuff, but I've never had anything kind of press on us this long, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's bizarre for me to even hear that it's been that. That's how kind of self-absorbed we can kind of get it sometimes. Because I feel like, just as someone who follows you and really appreciates you, Dustin, I feel like it's been an amazing year for you.
Oh, thank you.
it's kind of crazy. I feel like, isn't it weird that I'm basing how you're doing life-wise and success-wise, I'm putting that in quotes, by the way, by how many people I see share your
right,
your whatever in my Instagram feed?
Well, that's one of the tricky things about this year is, from a metric standpoint, it has been, I'm very thankful. It's been a nice, you know, climb. And putting out some work I'm really proud of and figuring out some other things. And so there's blessings and some of that is just a credit to me and my wife's little small business that is Dustin Nickerson Comedy, you know, as far as going, hey, we don't do this. Well, let's do this now. Let's try this. You save some money here. I'll try and make some money here, you know? So there's that, you know, that we're grateful for, you know, but there is, I mean, I think year over year, it's going to be about a 75% decrease in 2020.
Yeah.
So, hey, I'm thankful for the new Instagram followers, but Instagram followers don't keep the lights on. So,
yeah.
I don't ever want to come across as destitute in any way, because we're fine, you know, but that's, We're little savers, and I'm very grateful for that, especially because a year and a half ago, we're like, we should buy a house. <You know? laughs> We're really glad we didn't.
Isn't that the truth? Isn't that the truth? No, I really appreciate you just being honest about the year that it's been. And again, I feel like prior to this year, I rarely ever saw anything from you come through my Instagram feed. Yeah. And now it's been pretty consistent.
That's good. Hey, I got a nice little base there in Sioux Falls.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's been like, even from non Sioux Falls people, it's been, right. been pretty crazy to see that. And, like I, your occupation has such a weird part to it. And, as many occupations do, I can remember I messaged, John Christ, my wife and I, we went up with a couple of friends and saw you guys in Fargo, and I had interviewed John, so I had known him just a little bit, but I just said, it's pretty insane. Right now you have a full packed out room, large room full of people in Fargo, North Dakota. That's pretty flipping insane, yeah. just to say it. And then on the backside of that, and I said, at the same breath, I know that sometimes when I've preached to the loudest crowds, largest crowds, are when I'm most insecure and unsure of myself and struggle with peace. And so I just wanted you to know that tonight I'm praying for you personally. Mm. And so it's kind of that weird, like, huge stage. This is awesome. Then I go back to my hotel room and I'm totally yeah. by myself and I feel like a yeah. loser.
Robin Williams talked about that. It really, a lot of it was his struggle with alcoholism and depression. He talked a lot about it. Was there's this moment after the show when everybody shakes your hands and, you know, tells you how great you are after, you know, you have this great set or whatever, but it's just you. I mean, ideally it's just you going back to the hotel room and, you know, I've talked to several comedians, John included, has said there's this moment when the door hits behind you and it's just kind of an existential, like I don't think most people have that. I know most people don't have that, where you go from the highest to high to just all by yourself. You know, you go from the life of the party to now you're alone in the hotel room. And if Robin Williams is struggling with that, that's going to be a struggle for most folks. You know, I said this once to a comedian friend of mine named Kelsey Cook, and we were talking about, you know, the hotel room, and it's this little control thing. It's a controlled environment for us. You know, I put the heat way down. I want the AC on when I'm sleeping. And then when I leave, I put it way up. And she goes, me too. And we took a break. She goes, 'cause when you get back, you need a hug from the room. And it was so perfect. It really is. You just come in and 76 or whatever just hits you. And you're like, okay, I needed that right now. You know?
Oh, that really is. It's a bizarre kind of life. I mean, it's just really an interesting aspect of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and you know, there are like, you like Bob Seger's Turn the Page, and then you start living it and you're like, oh, this is a horror story. You know, like this is like, I mean, I do the joke in the special about having to avoid Cats in the Cradle while you're on the road. You're like, I cannot listen to this. I cannot. this is like a pop hit to you guys. And this is the stuff of nightmares for me.
You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network. And now a message from a network supporter.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I don't even know what the question is with this. Honestly, there's not really a question.
Good start. Good start. Yeah.
just comedy in 2020 is so necessary and needed. And like, even as a pastor, there's times when, when I'm meeting with a family who's just lost a loved one, I'm always shocked by how sometimes humor is just such a gift to laugh in those moments. Really dark situation even to bring up. I'll never forget, my first funeral was a man who took his life, that I had just met with him and he took his life. I mean, I've never seen so many emotions in a room. Rage to deep sadness, to joy. And then there'd be like moments of laughter. And it was almost just like a gift of like, my soul just needed that. Like, yeah. In all this heaviness, even in this horrible, like, I mean, a loved one has just taken their life. Like, it was just like, but such a gift. And I feel like that's what you've brought in many ways has been just like, it's really been hard. I mean, just even last night, a friend of mine, his sister died of COVID. And so like hard stuff, but like there's been almost just a release of having that, being able to laugh. I'm not even sure the question. Have you felt that?
Sure.
What is that about? Yeah. It's just a gift.
It's part of the reason that I feel like I made a shift personally, to talk more about what's going on, because I think I kind of bought in a little bit to the philosophy of comedy as a distraction. You know, it's like kind of this oasis, and I remove it. And I think that that's true. And I have lots of bits that are more timeless.
Yep.
But I think, you know, what you're talking about, where it's very cathartic and it's very like healing at times, is when we're talking about the things that are going on. But I really strive to do it in such a way that it's not opinion driven. But I'm just trying to find the funny in things. Like nobody could ever know who I'm voting for. If they think they do, like we're just talking about Paul, if they think they know, then they're not paying attention to everything. There's no way they would know, because I've never said anything about an endorsement one way or the other. It's just not, but I will make tons of jokes about politics, because that's my job, is to find I mean that both professionally, and like on like a calling level. Like, I feel like this is my, and I've lost people along the way, but they were never who I wanted. And that's why I make fun of them on the way out. You know, is like, you were, if I lost you on this thing, I was going to lose you on something eventually anyway.
Yes.
You
know? Yes.
And if I lost you because you got mad that I said, Black Lives Matter, then I was going to say something in a month that you weren't going to like too, you know? And so it's, but the reason that I do that is, when you laugh at something, you take its power away. You're mocking it. That's what laughing is, something is. So when a tragedy happens, something terrible happens, and you laugh at it, you're going, I'm bigger than you. You know, I'm able to stand above you in this moment and laugh at you. Not to say you're not take you seriously, but to take you less seriously. And that's how you got to heal. That's my take on trolls now. Like in my moments when I see a troll and it stings, and then when I can laugh at it and I'm like this, you know, like now I'm above it, and not superior to it, but above it. And I kind of have like dominion over it, for lack of a better word. So I think that was kind of my whole aim with a lot of the politics stuff, is like, if you're taking anybody too seriously in this, then the joke's on you. You know, like, let's have a laugh about all of this and how ridiculous any of these people are, and that we signed up for this process where we essentially elect a homecoming king and queen. You know, and then people attach their identity to it. Like, I want people to break away from that, think independently, have a laugh along the way. Those are kind of the goals that I'm having to do, that I'm aiming for, because I mean, kind of to your point, you've been in similar places. It is the laugh at the funeral. There's always laughs at funerals, you know, or at least there should be. It's a total side note. I had this thought yesterday that I told my wife. I think I put it as a tweet. Do we think it's kind of weird, that we wait until somebody dies, until we get everyone together to say nice things about them? Wouldn't that be really, we should do that like every 4 to 5 years. Like, just like, hey, I would love a funeral on every turn of the decade. I want a 30th funeral, a 40th funeral. Just everyone get together, have some cheese and crackers, say some nice things about me, and help me get through this next decade. It's a shame that we miss our funerals, is what I'm saying.
Oh, that is so true. We've talked about the same thing. We actually, from that concept, at our staff, on our staff here, we actually have like our anniversaries of when they were hired. Yeah. And we do that for our team, actually.
That's great.
Because we started saying the same thing. As they're leaving for another job, why are we now telling you how awesome you are?
Yeah.
Why are we waiting?
I bet this guy wouldn't have died from a stress-induced heart attack at 47 if someone would have given him a little encouragement along the way and tell him how much they like having him around.
So good.
Might have taken the edge off a bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Just for someone to have a cup of orange juice and say, "Oh, I really liked Bill. I always really liked when he was around." He didn't know that. He waited till he was dead to say it.
Yeah, exactly. No, so totally switching gears. What are you currently working on? What are you currently excited about, whether it's work or totally related?
I think I had I think Newsom canceled the rest of my calendar today. That's why I started there. I saw that announcement going, "Well, I'm home till New Year's, sweetie." Cuz I had like 6 gigs in California for the rest of this month, but I'm pretty sure those are all gone now. I'm really kind of in full promotion mode, really, for the special that came out last week, and doing
pods. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so special is called Overwhelmed. It's available on Amazon Prime, though you got to pay for it. It's not for free. Rent or buy, you can do that there. And then if you don't want to give Jeff Bezos your money, it's on another website called Gumroad. If you want to check that out. It was filmed outdoors for about 20-25 people in a parking lot surrounded by barbed wire and industrial waste. And everyone's wearing masks and everyone got their temperatures taken in. There was a COVID officer. It is really fun and weird. And
what a weird year. Keep going.
Yeah, well, you know. Essentially, I told the metaphor I've been using is, 2020 threw a curveball, but I think it was a hanging curveball and we hit it, you know, like, because I think this is a really fun, unique special. And it kind of highlights a lot of the things that I like to do anyways. There are some very fun, unique moments of the special. And, my wife said, it feels like you're there. She was there. She watched the special too. And she's like, "Oh, this is what it felt like when you were there." Cause there's some crowd work moments and there's some things that happen. A dude may or may not fall asleep on accident in the special. A plane goes over, there's a bunch of random noises that I have to deal with. It's a fun, That's unique cool. thing. And it's not, so I had a friend say, it's not a COVID theme special, but it's very COVID aware.
Yeah.
So, when people watch this down the road, they're like, "Oh, that was filmed in 2020.
Yeah. So that's available at your podcast as well.
My podcast is called Don't Make Me Come Back There. Don't Make Me Come Back There. It's a funny podcast about family. Me and my wife do half of them. And then me and a guest on the other one, where we talk about just different family stuff, people's stories. I'm so uninterested in what people believe, and I'm more interested in why they believe it, which I could go on a higher level of, like, is free will real? Free will real? Not going to get there yet, but I'm very interested in where people come from and their stories and how they were raised and where they were raised and what their experience with their siblings and their parents were like and their kids and their wife and their setting and their circumstance. And I don't know. It's just, it's like, that should be... Before you hear anybody's opinion, you should really have to read like a 10 bullet points. Like,
yes,
I'm from here, I was raised here, my parents were like this. I was born in this year. That's telling. And you would go, "Oh, that's why you're like that, for better or for worse."
Isn't that the truth? Finding out that stuff changes so much about what a person's saying.
Absolutely, it does. 1,000 I'll use this as kind of a serious example. So like in my house, I was raised, I had a veteran in my house, right? My uncle was a veteran, but he was a veteran of the Vietnam War. Well, that's going to shape the way that I think about the military. If this old disgruntled Vietnam vet is my mom, essentially, growing up, but the more you understand about that, we always give ourselves that benefit of the doubt, but we never give it to somebody else, there's a reason that we think the way that we are, or the way that we do.
There's layers to a person that impacts everything you say and do. And we love, just like you said, we know that about ourselves. We rarely extend that to others.
Never.
You know.
Yeah.
With the podcast, so I confession, I've never listened to it. I'm surprised I haven't indirectly through my wife, who thinks you're the greatest thing ever. Is it serious, humorous? Like, what does a person expect from it?
It's a comedy podcast, but I mean, if you're talking about family stuff, you're going to get into it sometimes, you know. So there's definitely some episodes, you know, where you get into it, but it's mostly comics that I talk to, and comics are kind of the, you know, we're leading the charge and being able to laugh at our problems. And so, you know, you can hear someone go in there and talk about how awful their parents were and laugh along the way. So it's a comedy podcast. It's mostly funny. But yeah, there's going to be some weighty stuff in there from time to time.
Yeah. Dustin, I got one random last question.
Great.
I hope it's not too bizarre. What is, like, I'm kind of talking to the entrepreneur behind what you do work-wise. Mm-hmm. What have you found that's moved the ball as far as, like, in that area? That's the weirdest question. Has there been something that you're like, and it's transferable, whether you're a pastor, a comedian, whatever your thing is.
Yeah.
Has there been something that you've seen movement on? Like, you're like, man, this is actually.
Yeah. I think that you've got to be driven. Like, you know, I'll say these things for myself. You have to be driven by passion. You know, I'm working on a project right now, and I was writing about the difference between me and my wife. My wife is good at everything and can do anything. There's nothing she can't do. And I can excel, sometimes exceptionally well, if I care about it. And if not, I was like an A and a C minus student. Like, I was a B average, but that's because I got A's and C minuses, you know? And it wasn't a matter of, it was purely a matter of interest. And if I'm not interested, I can't get into it. And so I think you got to be passionate. And the great thing about passion is it will fuel drive. And drive is what it takes to get good at something. I'm not to go, wrong one. Steve Martin. How come I can't point at this? There we go. Other way. Steve Martin, to quote Steve Martin, right? He talked about, I was not naturally good at anything. But he worked very hard at being funny, which is amazing, because he's like the funniest comedian, one of the funniest comedians of all time. And, that's what I feel about too. Like, I'm not talented enough to not work hard. I just, you know, but when you try these things and you're passion driven and you have kind of your goal in mind, you try a lot of things, and then you'll start to find the things that you are good at and you can get better at. And that's kind of like, from an online perspective, that's kind of what it was for me, is I was like, hey, I'm bad at acting. Anytime I do something where I'm playing some kind of character, it's bad. It's not funny. I'm not good at it. It's very unnatural to me. And I don't really want to get good at it. No part of me is like, I need to be a better actor. Yep, I don't want to be in commercials. I don't want to be in any of that type stuff. I like telling jokes as me. And I like commenting on things that are going on in the world, relationally, politically, not politically, but just stuff in general, what's happening everywhere. And that kind of like narrowed it in for me. And then I'm like, I do stand-up comedy. I do these send news things. And I do the podcast. That's what I do. These are the three things. And every once in a while, a shorter video, like a reel or something like that. But it's all very joke based. And it's not, I think once and then when you start focusing on the things that you're good at, stop comparing yourself to these other people. Cause I'm in a very busy space, right? Like, I can be like, people can be like, oh my gosh, Dustin, you have almost 30,000 followers. I'd be like, well, you know, that person has 2 million. And they're looking at me the same way I'm looking at the person with 2 million. But they're usually the person with 2 million. What they did is they found the thing they were really good at and just kept putting it out in the world and let people come to it. You know, I'll use this example. So Trey Kennedy does the most accurate, hysterical version of a middle schooler I've ever seen. It is so funny. I laugh. I cry laugh every middle school video that he does. But I can tell jokes about middle schoolers better than he can. So he can act like one and I can tell jokes, you know, because that's what he's good at. And this is what I'm good at. And both, there's space for both of us to be good at our things, you know?
Man, that everything you just shared was gold there.
Sweet.
I mean, it's truly like, and even back to what you said about Andy from Shawshank, I think so often it's just that faithfulness, just keep going, like just keep going. Is there been something that like comparison, anything that's helped you? Is that a thing in comedy world? Like that is a constant struggle. Like how did you figure out like what that those three focuses were? Like, was that really clear for you?
Pure trial and error. It's like a restaurant that tries new menu items, you know, like you don't know, oh, is this going to be popular? I like this. Are you guys going to like this? You know, cause that's, I create products, right? Like I'm an entertainer. Yeah. And like George Carlin said, like comedy is art, but he said it's a low art, which is hilarious. Like we're not painting anything. We're not making classics. We are an art. I will respect us enough to say we're an art. We're a low art form. You know, like you can only have so many diarrhea jokes and still call yourself an artist. Like the level between you and middle schooler has to be, the chasm has to be greater for you to be like an artist type, you know? But it's just total trial and error. You throw out a lot of different stuff and then you find something that you care about. And then when you care about something and it really starts to resonate with other people, then you're like, okay, now it's like hitting the sweet spot of the bat. Like, okay, now we're doing something here. But the comparison thing is hard because I think it's human nature, right? I think it's Tim Chester, right? It either leads to comparison, either leads to like arrogance or despair, or pride or despair. That's the truth. Either I'm better than you or I'm not as good as you, you know? And that's totally what that feels like. And the hard thing when you're in comedy, you usually have the stage. And the stage is our only, I was talking to my friend Taylor Tomlinson about this. The stage is our only truth. Like, cause industry is dumb and parasitical and, you know, they choose who they're going to make. And fame is the same way. And just because there's a lot of very popular acts that we go, even people are like, how did that guy get famous? Like they're not the best, but they're famous for whatever reason.
Yep. Yep.
But the stage is very honest. You know, the stage is like, I'm funny in this moment. I'm getting laughs. I'm, you know, it's kind of the only honest moment that we have. It's like sports in that way. It's very competitive or it's very, very clear outcome. But I mean, social media is metrics based. All what we're saying is to go, okay, how many followers did I get? How many do you have? Oh, okay. And that's just, there's this weird just kind of posturing. And then you put a post out and you go, well, this only got this many likes and the last one got this many likes. So I guess I'm feeling, it's like a scale, you know, like if the scale doesn't go down, I feel bad. And you're like, well, you can't compare yourself to your very best post ever, you know? Or like the very best, you're like comparing yourself. Like I mentioned Trey Kennedy. Trey Kennedy's like one of the most popular people on the internet. And I'm like, well, I should be more like Trey. You're like, or just do your thing, buddy. You know?
No, that is so good. Dustin, I'm grateful for the time with you. I'm going to put links to his podcast. Go follow him on social if you're not. Again, like the amount of times my wife has screenshotted something that you've done sent it to me, it's been a gift. But Dustin, thank you for the time today. Huge blessing to have time with you.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to The Conversation with Adam Weber. This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network. You can find more from Adam Weber on Instagram and Twitter and at adamweber.com.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network.